Hi guys, and welcome back to this week's episode of Let's Chat Ethics. I'm your co-host, Oriana.
And I'm your other co-host, Amanda.
And this week we're joined by Lydia Costopoulos, who we are very excited to have with us today. So she's someone that, you know, we talk about experts, we talk about generalists, but I would say that Lydia's an expert in many, many fields. So there's not a field that I don't think Lydia has expertise in at this point. I know that Lydia, you've done many things. Even you worked in fashion, AI, AI ethics, cybersecurity, geopolitical relations, international relations. But now I know you're an expert working a lot in health as well. So yeah, we're very excited for you to join us. And we also have a long history with Lydia as well. So we have a longstanding friendship and we're excited to have her back. And so I think, when did we meet? I think it was in 2020, wasn't it? So
I think it was 2020 during the pandemic, yeah.
Yeah. Those were good times. So yeah, Lydia, Lydia, I'd love to hand it over to you just to give yourself a bigger introduction. Tell us a bit more about, you know, your expertise and then we can go from there.
Thank you, Oriana and Amanda. It's a pleasure to be here. I definitely want to reframe my introduction. You've made me more qualified than I feel like I am. I do have a fashion
definitely
label.
Not.
It's called Empowering Workwear. In that small boutique fashion label, I look at and explore topics relating to national security and women's rights. And so I make pieces that are related to that. Separately, I'm a strategy and emerging technology advisor, having worked with the U.S. defense industry as well as foreign governments. And in relation to health, I am deeply passionate about body data tracking and health span sciences. And so I started a interview series called Project N of One because I would love to learn more about other people's ways of healthy aging. And so I have a consultancy called Abundance Studio. And the reason I called it Abundance Studio is because I approach problem sets from an abundance mindset, basically thinking of a world of opportunity instead of a world of scarcity. So that is pretty much me.
I think the thing that always strikes me every time we talk is like how many things you do. Like I'm someone who has also got a lot of interest and was like, oh, I need to narrow it down and focus on something. So I guess first is like on a more personal level is how do you manage to manage everything and like follow all your passions and your interests, because I think the word that comes to mind when I think about you is like somebody who's really passionate.
Definitely.
I really like living life. I definitely feel like that life is like an amusement park ticket. Like you get your one pass, like it's up to you which rides you get to go on, but it's a day pass. That's it. You know, like if you don't get on all the rides, and I want to get on all the rides. And so people ask me, how do you do it all? And I tell them I sleep. And I genuinely, this hasn't changed.
You do?
It's my number one thing. If I don't sleep,
wow.
I can't take on the world. Sleep is like the most important thing, because if I sleep well, like I slept great last night, in the morning, I'm like, great, I'm going to do this call. I'm going to work out. And then I'm going to tackle, you know, taxes, which is very hard. And, you know, just take on, because I have like more energy and I'm rested. And so sleep is important, but also separately from that, cognitively, it's giving myself permission. So it's something so simple, yet people take for granted, about giving yourself permission to pursue the things that really excite you. And I give myself permission more and more each day. And I sometimes wish I didn't have to go after everything I like, because then things would be simpler. But I can't help it. So here I am.
Yeah. You know what? That's actually really refreshing to hear, because I think whenever someone thinks of an entrepreneur or someone who's very successful in, you know, the corporate world, or they're managing lots of different passion projects like yourself or businesses, you hear like there's no time for sleep.
Yeah, sleep, I think,
you know,
3 hours
when,
a night.
Sleep when you die, and it's like
exactly.
That kind of terrible messaging. So I think that's very refreshing to hear. That you're actually prioritizing sleep, and that's helping you with all these things. I think to align a bit to some of the areas that I know you've worked very closely on, you know, with the United Nations SDGs and the future of AI, I was just wondering, you know, where I know it's kind of a big question, but at the moment, where do you see the future of AI with I guess the last year where we've seen the hype around ChatGPT, large language models. We've also had the side of people seeing the doomer and gloom of AI. Where do you at this moment in time see, I guess, the future of AI and how it will either prosper or help humanity, or maybe you think it's on the dooming side?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both. I mean, there's negative and positive aspects. And just like with any other general purpose technology or important technology, we need to be able to manage the risks. So, for example, some of the risks. So I've been involved in the United Nations discussions on autonomous weapons. And it might seem like a seemingly very, very difficult thing to talk about. But yet, if we think about it in parts, like what's the data that's being used? Where is it deployed? How is it being deployed? Where's the oversight? Where's the supervision? Where's the human in all of this? I think that where there's a will, there's a way. Just the same thing, you know, with nuclear weapons, they found ways to manage proliferation and manage the risks. Nothing's perfect, but I do think that we as a humanity have a track record of coming together and trying to do our best to mitigate disaster. But that's kind of like the extreme end. The non-extreme end is some of the real concerns that exist today around like biases having issues. And those are things that we're going to need to resolve. And I know some people use the word alignment and then other people use the word safety. There's still many words being used to kind of understand and manage the unintended results that AI will give you. And then, so that's just a little touch on kind of some of the negative and then to touch on some of the positive. A few years ago, I was commissioned to write a paper for IEEE on the difference between human characteristics and machine capabilities in this context, AI systems. And I think that that is where the future is. It is in understanding what it is we bring to the table that's uniquely human and what algorithms can bring to the table that's uniquely algorithmic. And there could be some overlap here and there, absolutely. But I think that before we've never had to like demonstrate why we were relevant as humans. And I think now we're going to have to demonstrate that more professionally speaking. And I'll just give an example. There's a design agency who asked me to give them a talk because they were really worried about generative AI and like all these pictures. People spend years perfecting Illustrator and all of these different software that create awesome 3D graphics. And they said, now, like, anybody can do that. Why would we be needed? We're going to lose our job. And I said, and this is the question that I always ask all of my clients, what are you in the business of doing? And the reason this is such an important question is when you don't understand what your Northern Star and what you're all about, you can easily get lost in the new tech. And tech is always last. The first thing is, what are you offering? And so the example I give so people understand that thought exercise is Kodak. Kodak understood itself to be in the business of printing amazing pictures, and they did. But if they understood themselves to be in the business of memory preservation, they would have then been investing in NFTs today and a million other kind of things. And so with back to that design agency, I said that they are creating ads and strategies for effective communication. And what they're in the business of doing is being cultural mediators and translators and facilitators of messages. And in doing so, the human talent in this value proposition is empathy and cultural fluency. And so these are kind of the things that I think are going to be more important with AI as we are going to be forced to face what it is that makes us human.
I think that's a really nice, I guess, a very precise or very specific, I think a nice way to look at it, that to think about what is it that we bring to the table. Because I think in the context of language models, for example, so that's the like AI technology that I work with the most in NLP. And I think because it's language, we have such a tendency to assume that like, oh, well, now like AI can write essays and it can do conversation and all of that. And I think that's partly where a lot of the fear is coming from, is even like not understanding what it is exactly that the models are doing and thinking that, yeah, there's sort of the same language capabilities that we have. And I see that, yeah, a lot of people obviously are relying on them a little bit too much, but that I maybe then there are the, yeah, there's still the question of what it is that then humans are bringing to the table. If models, if I can ask, let's say ChatGPT or GPT-4 or BART or whatever, to write me a research statement now, right? But for me, then I'm looking for jobs. But the fact is that actually the research statement that is going to write for me is not really the research statement that I would write for myself. And then there are still all these inputs that I have as a human, right? And so I think I still can't find the word. This is what maybe language models are good for. What's the word? when I mean this, what is the word I'm looking for? But yeah, I really like that way of still, I guess, I think in a way your question is a really nice tool to find the value that we still have in a world where, yeah, AI can draw pictures, can speak language sort of, right? Like you can ask ChatGPT even to write a poem, which I think is something that only humans can really find value in, but that I would argue that the poems that ChatGPT writes are not good in the sense that, like, also in the linguistic sense maybe, but it's lacking the meaning maybe that the humans can give it. And in terms of the cultural thing, I have some of my colleagues are now looking at culture. So I know that they showed that, of course, these language models have very US-centric values, for example. I think partly because they're trained on mainly US data and they're developed by a lot of American companies. But I think clearly a path forward where research is going to go. But I think that the way that cultures continue to evolve, probably we will always need human input to understand that culture.
So for example, in that paper, the IEEE paper, one of the things I put is our curiosity. And so, for example, when Galileo, you know, pondered gravity with the apple, you know, an algorithm that people say, oh, we're going to, you know, advance science. Yes, we're going to advance science, but we're going to advance it with human curiosity. And it's a tool that we're going to be able to use. And we need to really focus on the human because, and so this is the thing, like when technology can do anything you want, when an AI can produce any beautiful poem you want, any beautiful sci-fi story that you wanted, any beautiful image that you wanted, what's left is for you to have the imagination to pick what that's going to be. And that needs to have some sort of reason. And so, again, I think we're going to find ourselves moving more inward to ourselves, saying like, well, what is it that I want? What is it I'm trying to express? And these are muscles that I think we're going to have to work on, because we're familiar with how COVID has weakened our social muscle and how to interact with people. But I think that with AI, we're going to have to rediscover a muscle we haven't used as much for the most part, which is having to explain what we can bring to the table in terms of our humanness, what we can bring to an organization, what are the ideas, what are the imaginative new ways and paradigms. And if we look at history, every single new industrial revolution has created new paradigms, new value chains, new revenue streams, new jobs. Mm-hmm. And there is no difference in the fourth industrial revolution. We are creating new jobs and new value chains. So with social media, like, there are whole companies now that will manage your social media that have, and there's professions that is like social media manager, social media content creator, SEO, social media expert. And so all of those never existed and they never mattered until they did. And the same thing right now, when we are looking at the spatial web, like augmented reality or virtual reality, and particularly the augmented reality that's geotagged from space, where right now this isn't so much a pervasive thing, but eventually we're going to have augmented reality in our physical built environment, and it's going to be powered by GPS, and there's going to be ads, and there's going to be educational content and all kinds of things. Like, you can go to a national park, and then just like you had the physical sign that says this national park was created on X day, these trees are called this, you will also have an augmented reality version where you can scan and it'll have a hologram that pops up that explains to you something. And then we're going to have experts for that and the technical stack for that. And so I think technology brings so much, but you have to imagine that use case. And so just like you talked about the poem and how humans give it value, that's where that lies in. And then one last example I want to give is robotics and AI systems creating music, like physically. So like there's a robot on the piano playing, you know, a song perfectly. But for me, when I go to a performance, I relish and enjoy seeing another human with lungs like me and a heart like me and, you know, this very mortal body like me produce this beautiful sound or use an instrument in a beautiful way because I appreciate how long it took to master that skill. And so I am there to admire that person's achievement and watch it and be witness to it. And so while, you know, robots playing the piano is interesting, it's a little bit of a novelty right now. And, you know, maybe you could create a whole orchestra of robots playing, and that would be a bit of a novelty, but I don't know that it would be something that would be sustained like with human performers.
I think that's actually, that's interesting. I was thinking about the computers that beat the chess champions of the world, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't think chess, like, I think we still know of like chess champion celebrities, even though it's, I mean, it's like 20 years ago now that the computer beat the top chess player in the world. And yeah, in that sense, we still find that value in a human that has mastered something that is really at the top of. And I even think on a smaller scale, I don't know, like when I went to get my haircut, and most of the time I don't bring anything to do to the hairdresser. I like to watch the hairdresser work. And I think like, wow, you have like honed your craft and you right. do this. And even in my family, so my mom and my sister are both like amazing knitters. Like my mom, I mean, always in awe of the jumpers she can knit. And that's something that, again, machines can do and arguably probably better than my mom can do. It's certainly faster. But there's still this sort of like beauty in like flesh doing this.
I still think, because if you, I think we get a bit lost in the idea that everyone's going to prefer AIs or robots to you know, like taking over the world, taking the jobs, like that everyone's going to get lost in that. But if you think about even people's personal brands and how businesses are sold, or people who start small businesses, one thing that everyone tells you is that it's about, you're buying into the person more than the business in the beginning, really. Like people like a story, don't they? People like to hear how someone, you know, came from here and they started, they built their business and now they're going to sell you this product. People like to, even the biggest companies all had some message to begin with, or their manifesto or statement, and you were buying into the idea of the person maybe behind the brand. As corporations get bigger, that can get lost. But I still think the whole of the internet is really built on that. If you look at TikTok, Instagram, the reason like influencers and people do well, and influencing is such a big job now, is because you're buying into the person, really. It wouldn't be as exciting if you saw, like you said, it'd be a novelty. You'd see a page and think, oh, here's a robot dressing up. Whoa, I'll buy those clothes. That's exciting. Or, you know, here's a robot playing an instrument. But after a while, you're really buying into the people. And that's why I think influencing has done as well as it has. And it still continues to do well. So we do still value human connection. I can't imagine that getting to a point where that changes, really. I just think, like you said, Lydia, it's going to be, we're going to be having to exercise different formats of what we bring to a job or to like the workplace.
Sorry, I was just going to say that means that we have to rethink about our professions, like who we are. So when your job gets automated, then who are you as a professional? And so just like I said that I ask clients, what are you in the business of doing? I think we are going to have to ask ourselves, what are we all about? And what do we want to be all about? And be prepared to be agile about the narrative of our life and ourselves, and have that aperture grow a bit so that we can adjust to the changing times and understand that, I mean, we should have understood this before, that we are not our job. Yeah, it's very hard when we spend so much time at work. But I think that this creates an opportunity for us to say, well, who am I? What am I? What am I all about? And where am I growing to be?
I like that, because I think that there is a bit of a crisis with people where your identity can be really with your, like you said, your job, especially if you work, maybe you own your own business, or even if a corporate job, your identity can really get lost in that. So I think these are important questions that we have to ask. And that's why I think it's, you're a great example. So someone who has multiple interests where you're investing, and I guess using those different parts of your brain to pursue your passions as well. I mean, those are what makes us different to to a robot or an AI. I don't think there can be at this point a comparable.
And do you think, and I know that Lydia, you're quite involved in like technology communication, and I think you're very good at explaining these things also to like the general public and sort of sublimating the main points. But do you think if more people understood AI a little bit better and what it can and cannot do and what are the strong points and maybe where the future is going, that it might help people come to terms a little bit more with, okay, yeah, that your job might get automated one day, and maybe that's okay, and because that's not you. I don't know. I think that maybe I always think understanding technology a little bit better helps you to see where you might be able to move next. But I guess I wonder if you think that having a better understanding of the, not the future, but at least the technologies, and having some idea of what the future might look like can help people overcome any fears, or actually any hangups and maybe burnout from trying to keep up with all of this. Mm-hmm.
I think that there's a responsibility at the individual level, but I also think that there's a responsibility at the organizational or corporate level. So, and this is something that I talked about in my AI and corporate responsibility presentation that Oriana mentioned, and that when an organization decides to technologically unemploy people, and we've seen this happen in the past in the tune of like thousands, I think that there's a responsibility that the company has, not just to give them a paycheck and say, here you go, goodbye. I think they have a responsibility to say, well, here are some tools for you to upskill yourself, or, you know, some ways. But that's just kind of like the end of it. But the front of it should be, hey, we're about to let go tons of people. So for example, just a little while ago, Google said that they were going to let go of 30,000 people as they are pivoting. 30,000 people are a lot of people. And I do think that there's an element of duty of care to 30,000 people when you are pivoting your organization because technology is changing the game. And so from an organizational perspective, I think it's important to say, well, wait a minute, we're changing our direction because we need to. But like, how can we benefit from this huge talent pool? Like, are there other things we can do? What is the human value that they bring that we can create new value chains and new revenue streams? Like, this is not about kind of a charity. This is about actual profit and saying, this huge pool of talent who already knows our organization, what else can they bring to us that is no longer going to be what they used to do before? And that requires imagination. And this is why I think it's so important that we start to work on that muscle of ours. And then from an individual perspective, I think it depends where you are in your life. I think for kids and teenagers, I think it's the role of the adults around them and the institutions around them to help them imagine and help them see themselves that they're not going to have one position in life. They're not going to be an engineer in X and do X thing for the next, you know, 40 years of their life. And I mean, this also goes in line with the fact that we are also living longer, our demographics are longer, which changes a lot of work and economic paradigms around pension as well. But that's a whole other story. And then telling the kids, like, hey, it's not what do you want to be? What do you like to do? And when I talk to young professionals who say they're like in their early 20s and they're like looking at their future and they don't know what to pursue, and I tell them, go and find problems that you care about. Like, let's all be problem solvers. Because at the end of the day, the reason that businesses are successful is because they are catering to a gap, a challenge, a problem. And if they're successful, that gap is really real, that problem's real, and there's people who want to solve that with their solution. And so I think we should encourage kids, teenagers, young professionals to look at what are the problems in the world that they want to go after, and then train themselves to that and be agile to learn. And then for those who are already in the workplace, to understand that times are changing, and that, you know, for me, like, I have a bachelor's, a master's, a PhD, an executive education thing. I've got like all this stuff, but like, I don't think that I'm done learning. I'm constantly reading books. I am looking for what other certifications I can do. The latest one I did last year was on exponential organizations. So I'm certified as a consultant to do that, because I know that times are changing and I want to keep up with that. And I don't see that as a, oh my gosh, like, I've already studied enough. It's like, no, I've got a learning mindset, growth mindset. And so I think that those are important things for people to realize, that what you're doing may be technologically unemployed, but think about the problems you care about, because at the end of the day, we also want to have meaning in our lives. Like, I know there's a lot of people who clock in and clock out of work and are perfectly fine with that. But I think for the most part, if for economic prosperity, I think it's better when everybody actually enjoys what they do. And I think we'll do better that way.
No, I completely agree. I think that as humans as well, I think we like to have some kind of, well, we like to have a purpose, don't we? We like to have something that drives us, whether that's, you know, your family, your friends, the job you do. But that, I feel like everyone wants some kind of meaning. And I do think that I remember, I think that was a lot to do with Marxism as well, is thinking about, you know, what the different jobs that people do that don't actually bring people a lot of joy and a lot of value. And I think as humans, we want that. We don't necessarily, like you said, thrive in environments where we feel we haven't got a purpose, or we're not, you know, adding value or giving meaning, because I think that's what, as humans, what we really want. And that's why I think that's a really nice message to say, that find what, you know, brings you joy, what purpose there is, and what can bring more value and meaning. And I think that will be a lot of the future. I think generations will be looking for that a bit more as technology is evolving. There was another, I know this is a bit off the topic on this, but I was interested a bit more, the presentation you gave recently. I was interested about the environmental side, and I know that's something that you mentioned with the SDGs. And sometimes I think a conversation that maybe gets missed a bit in the sphere of the general public is the environmental costs, I guess, of technology, and how, what you see as the future for this, and how we can overcome this, or how we can make it more environmentally friendly, if that's possible.
Yeah, so with the environment, I think something that's really key is the water scarcity, because data centers use a lot of water. And this is something that we need to think about, like, globally, not just in like the US, where we have tons of data centers, or other specific countries where there's a lot of data centers. But this is something that, it's an ecosystem that we all have to think about. And so I know that right now, some of the big data center suppliers, they are thinking about how to use nuclear fusion, or how to, like, recycle the water that they use. But ultimately, if you look at the trajectory of where we're going, when you think about digital twins and smart cities and smart infrastructure, we're just going to need more and more cloud services. And so this is something we really need to think about quite quickly. And I think organizations should add this to their ESG reporting and think about that supply chain that's affecting the environment in this way.
Well, that's really interesting. I had no idea that they needed a lot of water. I feel like a bad researcher, actually. But I always think about the, like, CO2, and I'm always worried about the CO2 in AI and all of these things, but I never thought about the water. That's, I think, probably food for thought, because I reckon a lot of people in my field don't need that. Like,
I was going to say, I think Lydia did an amazing presentation that I attended. So I think there's a link online, I think, to that presentation, isn't there, Lydia? Because yeah. I think it's a great presentation about.
Yeah, it's called The Corporate Social Responsibility of AI. And there's a video actually on YouTube. that's available. It's 14 minutes.
Okay, I'll check it out. Yeah. I think that sounds really, really interesting. I think there's, I'm looking at it from academia, and there's been, I think, a big push now. Like, people are trying to say, okay, you should, we have some libraries to calculate roughly the carbon emissions generated by the experiments in a paper. And it would be interesting to think about the other sides of environmental impact that we might have. And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I have a feeling that a lot of us don't really know that much about it. We just know about the emissions of like large language models, or which are used. I reckon you'd have a really hard time nowadays getting a paper published that doesn't involve a large language model.
Yeah, I remember we did an episode, I think it was in the pandemic, called "Is Machine Learning the New Beef?" I do think that there's still there's not enough awareness about the environmental costs of technology in general. I think even when people think of the cloud, it's just like, oh, here's a magical cloud, our data's stored here. Not thinking of the water supplies, the environmental costs. So we'll definitely link your presentation in the chat to this, and I think that's a great one, because there is definitely a corporate social responsibility on this topic, for sure.
Thanks, I'll definitely give you the link.
Thank you. I think we're running out of time, aren't we? I'm just conscious of the time, so I don't know if you have any closing messages, Lydia, that you'd like to give to the audience on the topics we've shared today.
Probably the one message is that there is so much opportunity out there, and yes, there are risks and we need to manage the risks. But I think I would encourage people to allow themselves to be imaginative and think of all the ways that these new technologies can help our lives.
It's a really nice takeaway. I hope everybody found this as useful and enlightening as me. I think there have been a lot of moments where I'm like, oh my God, yes, yes, yes. and as always, I think Lydia's enthusiasm and passion for, I think everything, I think, wow. I'm always in awe of everything. Lydia, also, I think we haven't mentioned it, but we have talked a little bit about AI poetry and AI art, and Lydia also makes art, which I love. I always have the picture of, yes. I always remember the one with the robot and the heart. I always remember that.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I move, I'm like, oh, that would look great on my wall.
That one's about love and AI. And that's another topic. Like, it's, that's beautiful. The new love is love, where if you have a relationship with a conversational algorithm that brings you joy, who am I or anyone else to judge?
It's true. Yeah. It's true. I feel like, Lydia, we definitely want to have you on again, because I think there's so many, like I said, the word generalist, and then there's expert, but I would say you're an expert in many, many topics. So I think we could bring you back to speak about definitely more areas. And it's been amazing to have you on, as always.
Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to talk to you both.
And see everybody next week. Bye.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.